JG1.
Number 13B.
Okay, so therefore, that's the overall tonality that eventually these levels become in our consciousness a nested hierarchy, though we're going to discuss them right now as a hierarchical hierarchy. So dimensions, Max said he didn't choose the term layers. Layers are stratas, he said, like in geology, which he said is like a nice multi-layered cake, he told us in his 1987 class. He says layers exclude each other. They lie on top of each other. They contain no inner necessity to rise to the next. He told us that they don't constitute a oneness of many dimensions. So, therefore, he said they weren't hierarchical or they weren't controlled by a controlled hierarchy. This is what this one where you have higher and lower, that's called a controlled hierarchy. And this is called a nested hierarchy. So, therefore, that's why we wouldn't call them layers, because layers generally mean there's no inner necessity for one to rise to the higher, and there's no inner necessity for them to communicate together. So, the definition of dimensions, we know then, means that one identity can take on many forms, yet still remain the same identity. That simple definition then of the razor blade that we know, then that one identity, the edge of the razor blade, when looked at with the naked eye is straight, when looked at through a microscope, the same edge of the razor blade is broken, and when looked at through an electron microscope, it's atoms in motion. The same phenomenon from different levels takes on a different form. The same it is with God. Principle translates itself to many levels. It still remains principle. That wholeness has within itself the laws of translatability. And those laws of translatability are operating in a non-linear, self-organizing, a spontaneous structure, as we have seen that the new science tells us. And every time that principle or any phenomenon appears on another level, it takes on another form and has another law to describe the phenomenon on that level. That's why the definition for God principle is that principle means law. That's a science itself definition, that principle means law, which includes all other laws. So that one law of science itself appears on the level of divine science as the law of oneness. And that law of oneness covers the multitude of phenomenon that occur on the divine science level when principle and idea is one. And then that one law of God appears on the level of absolute Christian science as a law of spontaneity in many aspects. And that law of spontaneity through the laws of divine impulsion of the Word and the divine specification of the Christ and the divine conservation of Christianity and the law of divine pre-established perfection of absolute Christian sciences, Christian science. Those laws cover a multitude of phenomenon on that letter. It's a different form. It's how principle relates to its calculus of ideas, how principle appears in specific individual forms. And then on the level of a Christian science, that one principle takes on the form of how the calculus of ideas resolves illusions, and therefore that law is the law of divine causality, appearing as the law of creativity in the Word, the law of translation and retranslation in the Christ, the law of self-reflection in Christianity and the law of structured understanding in science. Those laws cover a multitude of phenomena, yet still remain the one law, God. Now, that's the basic definition. Dimensionalism is a method. It's a tool for measuring reality, for discovering, we would say, the many-sidedness, the many facets of being. Dimensionalism broke in on consciousness because in consciousness there is that law of inner acceleration, life, the law of inner logicity, truth, and the law of inner goal-directedness, love. And it's wonderful when it broke in. We know it broke in on Mrs. Eddy's consciousness in the 1900s, 1900s, when she was working, in 19th century basically, but it wasn't, we see, because Mrs. Eddy thought of dimensionalism and wrote her textbook in a structured way. Being brought the concept of dimensionalism, it was the idea which is ripe for that time. As we saw, Victor Hugo said, nothing is more powerful than an idea is ripe. At that time, nothing is real and eternal but God and its idea, and this idea is sweeping down the century. And as Buchholz said, that science thinks the scientist. At this time, the idea that was ripe was the idea of dimensionalism. Between the 19th and 20th century, Einstein working on his multidimensional mathematics and physics combined with his E equals mc squared and his theories of relativity, where around 1905 he begins these theories and publishes them. See, that same idea can take its form in art. Dimensionalism, the multidimensional view, breaks in at the time of the late 19th century, early 20th century. At that time, we have Mrs. Eddy working then in Christian Science. We have Einstein in physics. In the arts, in literature, we have Gertrude Stein working. Her work is very dimensional. You take her statement, a rose is a rose is a rose. She's not blindly repeating things. She's seeing a rose from many different dimensions. She sees a rose from the standpoint of a person, a rose from the standpoint of the smell of a rose from the standpoint of a name called Rose. She had many dimensions and many faceted behind saying a rose is a rose is a rose. That was in literature's way of expressing the many-faceted being. At the same time, her friend Picasso in the fine arts was giving us cubism. Cubism was showing us the many facets of a face. If you think of Picasso's girl before the mirror or woman before the mirror, you will see in one photograph the many facets of that girl. She's looking forward at you, she's looking to the right, and she's looking to the left, all in one picture, all happening in that multidimensionality. In music at that same time, Schoenberg was writing his multidimensional scores. One, I think, was called Many Pieces or Little Pieces. And his music has a very strange sound because he's showing many, many sounds juxtaposed to get together. So this sense of dimensionalism isn't just... it's something being is innate in being and being brought and broke in at around the turn of the century. And it's a tool, as I said then, for discovering the many-sidedness of being. If we have only a one-dimensional mentality, we go around like we have blinders, huh? And that's the problem with a one-dimensional mentality. It seems to always want to divide the world into nothing but. If the world only sees one level, like the level of Christian Science, it only sees that one level and calls it the nothing but this is going on. And somebody with a nothing but reductionist mentality is always arguing with the next person because they only see one view. But somebody who has a dimensional consciousness sees, yes, their view, but other sides and facets of the same thing. So you can say yes to something, but you can also say no to something. And so the logic of Christian Science is a multidimensional logic. It isn't just a yes and a no, like the Aristotelian logic where this reality is real and this reality is real. Good is real and evil is real. It's a logic that is dualistic. And that kind of logic leads into compartmentalization and one-dimensional thinking. So we saw then that this reductionistic view of the mechanistic society, the nothing but world, and dimensionalism then resolves that. We know a simple example of the nothing but world is if we take the human body, and an engineer would call it nothing but a combustion process. And a chemist would call it nothing but an oxidation process. And a biologist would call it a nothing but a complicated biological mechanism. And a cybernetician would call it a compound of computers. And a theologian would call it a sinning mortal most of the time. So we know that's the age of specialization. And Bucky Fuller, I love in his book, The Operation, pardon me. Bucky Fuller, in his book he brought out, called The Operation Manual for Spaceship Earth, said that specialization leads to extinction. And therefore, because it becomes so nothing but, it excludes everything else. And that's the danger of the nothing but world. It will take its view and try to generalize it about the whole. Now, how many of you read that little book, The Flatline, by Abbott? Isn't it wonderful? I mean, think of it. Where did he write that, in 1883? Isn't it just terrific? I mean, you'd love that book, and the way it explains that short science fiction. I wish we had time, we'd read it together. I mean, it's one of those things you couldn't go over and over and just love the way he says it and the way he expresses it. When I got into it, I had a hard time just getting past his little beginning introductory paragraphs. They're so good. But in there, he tells so clearly then what this dimensional world is about. We know that the point land was no dimensions. It's a beginning with a point. It's just a point. There's no dimensions to it, kind of like a caveman mentality. Then he tells us about line land, one dimension, linear thinking. When the point is extended in one direction, it creates a line, doesn't it? Well, you could go the other way too, but as long as it's going straight, it is a one dimension. We know that flat land was the two dimensions, like a plane, like a shadow. That if we take that one dimension and extend it in one direction as a line, then spin a line around the midpoint, it becomes a circle. That becomes two-dimensional circle on a plane. But then there's space land, he said, the three dimensions. And if we spin a circle on its axis, it creates a sphere, doesn't it? But today we see even more when we say there's another dimension, because that's sphere can spiral through feedback, where the 1, 2, 3, 4 becomes a 1, 2, 3, 4 becomes a 1, 2, 3, 4, and we get kind of an infinite dimension coming on of the fourth dimension of space-time continuum to Einstein, but the fourth dimension in sciences we'll talk about. We know that in that fourth dimensions of space and time, that there is then a where space a where, time, and a when things happen. But the physicists today talk about 11 dimensions, not just 3 dimensions or 4 dimensions, but they have proposed the possibility that there's not only the space-time dimensions that we see, but there's a possibility that there are 7 hidden dimensions of non-gravitational forces. And so they will talk about 11 dimensions to explain the unity of the universe, and they somehow are trying to appeal to this in order to satisfy this grand unified field theory, the GOOP. So we know now there's many, many dimensions going on, and that this is still a question of how many dimensions there are in being, and the physicists work with this. One physicist proposed that they could figure out the grand unified field theory, which was trying to tie gravity and the electromagnetic force and the strong and weak forces together under one grand unified field theory. He proposed you could do it by a 5th dimension. So we see then that there is a dimensional logic going on in Christian Science, and we will see that each of these levels have a different logic. If we generally take the level of Christian Science, there are not only different laws that define the different levels, but there's different logic to the level. I was looking for a particular transparency, can't find it. What then would be the logic on the level of Christian Science? How would we define that? We see that the law of the level of Christian Science itself is that law of divine causality. Let's turn. So if we look then at page 78, 79, but mainly 78 right now in Kapler's study aid for the science of Christian Science, we have there the different laws of the levels, and we see that those laws cover a multitude of phenomenon. Now, Max Kapler has also given to us in his booklet called The Logical Reasoning in Christian Science that we offer as free literature what the different logics are on the different levels. Now, if we look out, first of all, from the level of Christian Science, what would we call the logic of the Christian Science level as we ascend? Oh, it's definitely the law of causality, but what's the logic? I'm asking for the logic of the level.
Well, it's not quite two-valued logic, but it's close to two-valued logic.
All right. It would be then a good attempt at the two-valued logic. We'll see it's resolved on Absolute Christian Science, but anyhow, as Dave says, it's not quite two-valued because he's aware of the Absolute Christian Science level resolving the two-valued logic, and because there's only one line between Absolute Christian Science and Christian Science, it's hard to say that it's a real two-valued logic because it's overformed. But let's say if we start out at face value, it would be more or less the reasoning of a two-valued Aristotelian logic, a logic that says, Aristotle said, good is real and evil is real. They both have a value. And so therefore, it's on that level of at Christian Science where Mrs. Eddy will say that God heals disease. And yet on another level, she'll say God knows no disease. Or she will say spirit destroys matter. And yet on another level, she'll say, spirit knows no matter. Well, no wonder a logical thinker, especially drilled in Aristotelian logic, would throw the textbook out the window. They say, doesn't this woman understand logic? You can't say spirit destroys matter and then tell us it doesn't know matter. That's, of course, a one-dimensional opinion or view of the textbook from just an understanding of the logic of Aristotle and not the understanding of a dimensional trans-classical logic. The Eastern world has always dealt with a trans-classical logic. That logic can take many forms. But the Western world has built mainly on the Aristotelian two-valued logic, which gives us then that nothing but consciousness. And there the argument always comes to divide one camp against the other camp. We argue, friction in our conversations. It would cease if we thought dimensionally. All right? Then as we go up to try to solve the paradox that appears in the textbook, where Mrs. Eddy also will say, erring mortal mind, erring mortal, misnamed mind, produces all the organism and action of the mortal body. And then at another time says, mind produces all action. How can the divine mind produce all action if mortal mind is producing all action? So how is that paradox resolved? It's resolved by a control hierarchy, by the higher controlling the lower, always. The lower never controls the higher. The higher causes the lower to ascend. So therefore, what would be the logic on the level of absolute Christian Science? We must define it as a logic. So when we're talking to others, we'll say, well, the level of Christian Science is the Aristotelian two-valued logic being exposed. And the level of absolute Christian Science, what would we call it? It overforms the two-valued logic as a dual conceptional logic. A dual conceptional logic. There are two concepts under this logic. Dual, you could say two concept logic. It's a one-valued logic, yes, as you said, because that's the higher logic of divine science, seen from two different standpoints. So you're feeling to say one value is right, but we hold that off for divine science. But it's the one value seen from two different standpoints, so we call it dual conceptual. Now, why is Mrs. Eddy's logic a dual conceptual logic? Her logic is not a two-valued logic. That's why Dave hesitated and said, well, it's kind of a two-valued logic, because Mrs. Eddy never used the two-valued logic, never. She never has in her textbook counter fact. Where the Aristotelian logic will say this is a fact, good, and the counterfact is evil. But Mrs. Eddy never says that. She will say good is real, and it's a counterfeit called evil. Her counterfact is a counterfeit. Now, is a counterfeit real? No. So she said that, all right, to Aristotle, you're okay. We needed your logic in order to come out of an undifferentiated mystic hole, and we needed your logic to separate this from that. So we can't say it wasn't necessary. It was necessary. It enabled man to start to think logically. But it had to be overformed because of its problems with duality. And so therefore, Mrs. Eddy says, all right, Aristotle, yes, thank you for separating things into good and evil. But good is real, and evil is unreal. It's a counterfeit of good. In fact, she says, only good is going on, and evil is only a misunderstanding of that which is good. This is a wonderful standpoint. One just loves absolute Christian Science. It is so terrific. Here is where we get all our difficulties. On this level, we see that Mrs. Eddy demands us always, it becomes so apparent that our reasoning has to be from cause to effect in the science of mind. We begin with mind, which can only be understood through its idea and not through its opposite matter. Therefore, it's on this level that we get the one thing, the one valued logic, the one God seen from two different standpoints. If you look at something, you can see two things. And I always love to put up this photograph and say, what do you see, a young woman or an old woman? It's one picture for the cassette audience. There's just one image there. Has a lot of dark hair, and it looks like there's a face there, and then there's kind of a shawl over it. But is that face with the dark hair a face of a young woman or an old woman?
Well,
you
see the cheekbone.
Okay, so for the tape audience, we just had a lot of fun. We could see then that this, and I had turned the recorder off briefly, and I'll just summarize, that some of us could see both the young woman and old woman simultaneously, which is good. Some of us had trouble seeing the old woman, which we felt looked a little witchy. She has an eye with kind of a crooked nose and a deep mouth. And then the young woman, actually, the nose of the older woman is the cheekbone of the young woman looking over her shoulder out into the distance. That's that thing where one thing can take on different forms, yet still remain the one thing. This is really the kind of equivocal space that we're dealing with on Absolute Christian Science.